Good morning and welcome to Radio Rehab. Your host this morning will be Miss Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warren County Court Substance Abuse Program. Like all our talk programs, we encourage you to call in to 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. This is a brand new program that we hope you'll definitely enjoy. And now, Radio Rehab with Lisa Seif.
Good morning, Tri-State, and welcome again to Radio Rehab. We have another exciting guest for you this morning. And I was told by my best friend in Seattle that every time I get on this show and say I'm not going to talk very long because we have a good guest, I end up talking for five more minutes. So I'm going to introduce you to Vicki right off the bat, who's going to talk to us about her experience in the world of music. She was a jazz singer and in relationships with people that she loved that had drug and alcohol problems. Please feel free to call in 424-1400. Nothing's below the belt at Radio Rehab. We'll answer any of your questions. Vicki, thank you for coming. Hi.
Hi, and thanks for asking me.
Glad you're here.
I'm really excited about this program because I think you get views from people that give information that sometimes people don't want to ask or they don't know how to ask.
Yeah.
Sometimes they hear things that may be applied to them and just kind of opens up some doors.
Thank you.
I think one thing that drew me to this field, because I do supervise a halfway house and I do teach substance abuse classes as well.
Yeah.
Is that during my time playing music for a few years, I obviously came into contact with a lot of alcoholics and addicts. And as a matter of fact, I was married to someone who was alcoholic, and I had no clue what that disease was.
Did you know something was wrong?
Well, I knew I would call in a lot when he didn't go to work, and I knew that he didn't act right at night. And I mean, we had 10 years of going to bed and having a beer on my head before I woke up the next day.
Mm.
And, yeah, there was something wrong, but I was too young and green and naive and didn't want to certainly ask anybody that was in the family because I didn't want them to wonder what was the matter with me.
Yeah.
So I kept it to myself, and we got divorced. But that kind of drew me to this field, too, because there are so many people that are uninformed about the disease. I think a lot of relationships could be saved if people just asked questions and got more information and was able to talk about it.
I think that's so true. How do you this show is kind of a way of introducing it to the community, but how do we inform people that they should even ask the questions, that something's abnormal there?
Well, I have a couple of venues for that, and they're both through work. And one of them, through school, is to inform my students that this is a family disease and encourage them to ask questions. And a lot of times I get too much information that's personal to mm-hmm. them, so I remind them that it's not a group.
Right.
You know, but it just gives them information so that they can either look at their families or their friends or their coworkers or just kind of have a clue how they can help in that little circle of
yeah.
the world. At work, we encourage family sessions, and I'm really big on bringing in the other person.
Definitely.
To get a clue, because sometimes you assume people know things and they don't.
Yeah. So you didn't know in the relationships in your life if there was trouble from drink or drug?
No, it never occurred to me, because I played in nightclubs.
That's true.
I would go in and I would do my job, which was a job.
What did you play?
I played guitar and sang. And
wow.
Yeah, I did that for a long, long time. But
is that part of the nightlife in the clubs, drinking, drugs?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the thing is that a lot of musician friends I wouldn't work with them because they weren't dependable. They
yeah.
wouldn't show up or they couldn't finish out the whole night. You
sure.
know. But we would always have drinks sent to us. And the club owners would expect us to have them and drink them. And I've killed a lot of plants.
yeah.
but, you know.
So when you're drinking too, can you tell when somebody else is drinking too much?
Oh, well, see, I never did drink too much because I couldn't feel my fingers and then I couldn't play and then I wouldn't be able to work.
well, good for you. But, I mean, could you tell when other people
oh,
were
yeah.
drinking too much?
Oh, yeah. It got pretty grim at the end of the night.
So you think people do know when somebody drinks too much?
I think when you're drinking with them, you're all in it together, and unless somebody falls down, you really think they're as okay as you think you are.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, because y'all progress kind of at the same level, and y'all, you know, unless somebody's the designated driver, they're just kind of all in it together, and as long as they can get up and go to work the next day, they don't think there's a problem. Even my family was falling apart. I didn't have children with this man, but our relationship was just not there. And it wasn't what I wanted, but I didn't know alcohol had anything to do with it. Yet he woke up with, I think it was Southern Comfort and coffee. He had vodka tonic for lunch and went to bed with a six-pack of beer. But it never occurred to me alcohol was a problem. Now, how dumb is that?
Well, do you think that's most girls?
I think that's a lot of people. And even, I don't know about, you know, men, how they view their women if they're drinking. I don't know.
Very differently.
But I know I was just so clueless, and I'm a relatively intelligent person.
Yeah.
I thought.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had exposure to a lot of things. But in that area, I was just so clueless.
You know, my judge has often said, why are girls, especially in our programs, it seems they aren't as successful? And I don't think it's that they don't take it as seriously. They're just not as successful at maintaining sobriety. Do you have any thoughts about that? Why girls keep ending up with boys that lead them astray? Or
Well, it could be a couple of things. A lot of the girls that we see have children.
Yes.
And I was a single mother for 7 years, and I know how difficult it is to work, go to school, raise a child.
Pressure.
You know, have a life.
Yeah.
So you throw an addiction in there that takes your focus, all those things you need to be doing, and that doesn't help. So I think it would be pretty easy to gravitate to somebody who would take care of you, or at least help take care of you while you're doing these things. A lot of times, if we're not in the highest point of our life, the relationships we gravitate to aren't really the ones that are healthy for us, because they're the ones we're accepted in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so we really don't go for the gold whenever we don't feel worthy of the gold.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. Do you think because you were in the music industry and the bar life that it was just a natural progression for you to end up with men that had drinking problems?
Oh, yeah. That's where I met them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when you...
Hanging out in the bars.
When that's where you work.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's true. And I really didn't get involved with musicians.
Was that just a rule of yours personally? Or?
Well, it's kind of like you don't want to date where you work.
Right.
But it just wasn't, you know, wasn't something I did.
Yeah. So being in the bar life and the music life and ending up with men that had alcohol problems, what finally helped you to see that you didn't have to live like that anymore?
Well, actually, my turning point was when I had my son. Because I think when I look back over my life, I think I have a lot of codependency issues. And I think that's what led me to become a social worker.
You know, I never even hear the term codependency anymore.
I'm a recovering codependent.
How would you define codependency?
With my husband that was alcoholic, I would not talk about anything wrong. I would call in for him. I would, you know, anything that would make our life look normal, I went the extra mile because I was embarrassed.
Enabling?
Be normal. Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of saw a pattern in that over other relationships where I would gravitate towards the, I guess you call them bad boys, because they were more fun.
Sure.
You know, and I would meet somebody normal and nice, I wouldn't know what to do with them.
Yeah. So when your son was born, though, that was your turning point?
It was my turning point because I had someone that I was responsible for and that really needed me, and that gave me a whole different focus. And I turned into the mother bear protector person, which really changed my life. And that's why I was without a relationship for 7 years. I was busy.
You got picky.
I got picky. And my time was very precious because I also had returned to school you know, when you have a child, you can't be sitting on a bar stool for the rest of your life.
Well, you know,
and Vicki, get a real job.
Yeah, and you really have worked hard, and I want you to tell us more about that, but you are definitely a success story. Why do you think for you, I know you work in this field, you see a lot of people, why do you think having a child was just enough to motivate you when we see so many others with children that just can't pull it together?
I don't know if this has a lot to do with it, but I didn't have my child till I was over 30. And I think having 10 years of running the clubs,
that's interesting.
I've had a lot of different careers. While I was playing music, was also always my stable.
Mm-hmm.
But I did other things too. I was in insurance, I was in real estate, and I was a model for
my God.
So doing those things, music was the only thing that was
steady.
The thing that, which is really interesting, because most times music's the one thing you can't do steadily.
Right, right.
But I think I got a lot of the running around and trying this and that out of my system before I had him. And then when I had him, I mean, that was my world.
That was your turning point. Tri-State, hang on. We're going to have Vicki back after break. She's not going anywhere. We're going to talk more with her about relationships and get ideas from her about how women, men, families, sisters, brothers, whoever it is, can get in recovery, stay in recovery, and have a healthy, happy life. That's what it's all about. If you want to call, 424-1400. We're here at the pump. We'll be back after break. Thank you.
Hey, you. Yeah, you listening to the radio. It's me again. Have you got that HIV test yet? As I mentioned before, if you have put yourself at risk by having unprotected sex with more than one person or used IV drugs, guess what? You've put yourself at risk for HIV. Make that appointment today by calling the Vandenberg County Health Department at 435-5683 or stop by 420 East Mulberry. It's that easy. Remember, everything is confidential. No one has to know you've gotten the test unless you tell them, so do it. What do you have to lose except maybe your life or your partner's life? When in doubt, get checked out.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab, and now here's Lisa Seif.
Welcome back. We're having a great discussion with Vicki, who runs a halfway house here in Evansville, and herself has gone from musician nightlife to mom and social worker. So I was just talking to her about how in the world she made the transition to social work, Vicki.
Well, that was an interesting story. My son's father and I got divorced when my son was 4 years old. And at that time, I really didn't want to have this be a traumatic experience any more so than it was going to be, because he and his dad were very, very close. And so I took him to a counseling session over in Jeffersonville, Indiana, their hospital over there, and they had little groups for kids to let them know it wasn't their fault. And after going through that 6-week program with him, I decided that I needed to do that. Whatever that was. And I asked somebody, I said, well, what do I have to do what you do? And they said I needed a master's degree in social work. And I thought, okay, well, I majored in party back a long time ago. I was on academic probation when I left school back in the early 70s. So let me give a little thought to this. In the meantime, I had moved from Louisville, Kentucky, because his father moved to Florida. And I moved to Louisville, from Louisville, Kentucky, back to my hometown in Spencer County.
Yeah,
not too far away. My grandmother was elderly, and I thought that I needed to spend some time there with her.
Sure.
Of course, there are no nightclubs there.
So Dry County.
I opened up a pet grooming shop in my home, in my basement, so that I could have a job while I went back to school.
My goodness.
So I commuted to USI. Worked in my little pet grooming shop, and I got a job with Southwestern Mental Health in their group homes, because that is the agency. You know, that's where I wanted to work. And I figured out that's a good way to get in the back door. So I was doing all these things and commuting an hour. So, you know, and this is another point when women or men tell me, I can't do that, I'm not the one to tell that to. So I completed school, and I was getting ready to, as a matter of fact, I'd been accepted U of L for my master's degree, and I met my current husband, who is a wonderful man, who is not an alcoholic or addict. It just is incredible for me to find
A normal person.
Now, he is exciting, though. So. But we got married, and I moved to Evansville. And then I went ahead to school the next year and completed my, or well, I started my master's degree. And the whole focus when I started school was, it kind of evolved into getting into addictions because I'd worked in clubs for so many years. I'd seen so much. I'd been in relationships with addicts and alcoholics, and I didn't know what that was, but when I look back on it, there's a pattern there of me trying to save people. And
yeah.
And so I thought, let me get my degree.
Yeah.
And but that, besides that, and my son, it's just, and I spent about a 7-year period where it was just me and my son, you know.
But with definite goals.
Insignificant relationships in there somewhere, you know. Yeah, with definite goals. Definite goals. But, I mean, I think what drew me to the field was it's a compilation of all of that. And just kind of getting to know people because I'm a real people person. Mm-hmm. I like to find out their stories. And then I find some similarities and I have some aha moments that I feel the need to share.
Yes.
You know,
to and see others have them.
Yeah, and it's great when somebody gets it.
Yeah.
And it helps them in their relationship, and it helps them give just a little different perspective.
In the halfway house, what an opportunity for you to be a mother for so many men that are lost, lost sheep.
I feel like the dead mother sometimes.
Yes.
But, you know, it is good, and I've been very blessed that they have opened up and talked to me about what's in their heart, because a lot of times they go through so many years with no one to share how they really feel, because they don't want people to know. They have to keep this persona.
Yeah,
and then
be tough.
I think for me, being a female is a little bit different too, because and being older, I think if I did this in my 30s, it wouldn't be the same dynamics at all. You know, but I think they feel comfortable talking to me about whatever, whatever's on their heart. And then anytime I can bring in a significant person in their life, you know, whether they have a clue or not about what they're going through, I think it always enhances the relationship, or at least the understanding.
Do you think that's the key to success in this thing, having the right relationships?
Right. And I think another thing is that, especially with halfway house people, forming relationships that are meaningful and that they're going to carry on when they leave. Because so many times they may go through the hoops of going to meetings and say, oh, I'm doing this, when they're really not. And then when they leave, they don't have a foundation to take with them. And it falls apart pretty quickly if you don't have a good, you know, foundation.
Support.
And if you don't have a family, you have a chance to build one.
Yeah, yeah. And they're with you for how long?
They can be there up to 6 months.
I'd love for you to come back sometime and tell us about the halfway house and how we can get folks in there that might need to be in there. Because I know it, that is your baby, isn't it? Is that where wanted to be? The halfway house.
There, and just with people with the
longer term than 10 days.
Disease of addiction, because in rebuilding families.
That's kind of your theme, isn't
together.
It? The rebuilding relationships, rebuilding families.
Right.
And you had a family, your son.
Right.
You think that helped you stay the course?
Oh, yeah. I think so, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish that was enough to motivate a lot of other moms.
Well, it might be. I think if people talk and if they can get over themselves enough to put, you know, be real and look at what's really going on instead of the persona they want everybody to see. Everybody has issues. You know, we just don't all claim to have any.
Yeah, and we want to look tough and
that's
good.
That's right. If we open up and say, hey, you know what, let's talk and be real, I think we can do a lot of healing. But if you don't throw it out there, you're not going to heal anything.
No, and with the alcoholic, that's so key. Some people can get away with going through life not really revealing themselves, but with alcoholic and addict, they have to, or they'll relapse for sure.
Right.
Is that the same for you as a family member of alcoholics? Do you think for the codependent, the partner, that they too have to have a place they can go and be honest and reveal their frustrations?
Oh, yeah, they sure do. They sure do. I know my son's grandmother, she's been in recovery over 40 years now.
Wow.
And certainly addiction runs in that side of the family rampantly, as well as in my side of the family. Not an immediate family, but I have an uncle who was alcoholic.
And well, you were surrounded by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just very difficult. But if your eyes aren't open to it and you don't accept that this is real and, mm-hmm. and it can affect me, then you're going to put on blinders and not be able to help somebody until it's too late.
Yeah.
And, you know, usually by the time people come to treatment, body rot has set in. It's either body rot or the legal system.
Definitely.
And then they're so far down the road that accepting something is a little bit more painful.
Did you ever try to confront your alcoholic, though, and say, I know you've got a problem, let's go get help? Can spouses force them to get the help?
Well, me personally, my alcoholic husband was gone. I mean, we divorced years before I met Jonathan's father. So, no, it's there was no confrontation. There was no... You know, I just knew it was a bad marriage and I needed out. You know, I wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is he had, right before we separated, he had, as a matter of fact, is after I moved out, he had gone to a 30-day rehab that I heard about. And on the way home, he picked up a case of beer.
Jeez.
On the way home.
Right.
But I was already
home.
Out of the situation then. It was, when I shut a door,
yeah.
And I didn't go back there. We didn't have children together, so there was no reason
to stay in that.
To do that, right.
But you had said earlier on, a lot of girls don't even realize that who they pick has the drinking problem.
Right. Well, when you're young, and you usually meet people at a party.
Partying, yeah.
And some people don't cross the line to addiction, and some people do.
Right.
And you really don't know that. Right off the bat.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of clues to even think, well, maybe. But once you get involved with somebody, you're so willing to overlook the negative things or the problematic things that it's just a different ball.
Could anybody have talked to you back then and said, you're in a bad deal here?
Oh, I would have taken the stance of defending my man.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
No, I'm one of these hard-headed people. When you tell me no, I'm going to show you why I
sure.
should.
Yeah.
And I had to get over that. And I'm still not really over it. But I recognize that about myself.
And that's common with a lot of girls that are in these relationships with boys that drink or drug. They protect the man, and it alienates them from their own parents.
Well, people want to be loved by somebody, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just such a... You know, and especially if people have been on your case for your behaviors and you find somebody that wants to give you a hug, you just go for that hug. You
yes.
know, and you just...
And if they look good, sound good.
If they look good, you just have mine. It's not, you know.
My mother just doesn't know what she's doing.
That's right.
Well, the dating game in recovery can be a risky situation for folks in recovery.
You know, I ask people, when they think about relationships, I ask them, would you date you right now?
Oh, no.
And I've never had anybody say yes. I said, so keep that in mind.
Would you want to date you?
It's not that you're not a wonderful person, but today.
But it is so instinctual to want
to
be with someone, like you said, and be special and buy a card for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's so natural for girls and boys to want to be in relationships, but we know in recovery that can be deadly for them.
Right now, they need to watch the movie, 28 Days?
Oh, yeah.
Get a plant, get a dog, and then get a relationship. But make sure the plant lives before you get the dog, because partial to animals.
Well, from music to dog grooming to social work, and now such an imprint you're leaving in people's hearts that are trying to get sober. Vicki, that's awesome. Thank you for coming. I want to have you back, and we want to invite you back to talk more.
That'd be great.
And I know people can find you at school, you're teaching, at the halfway house, you're there as a social worker and a great friend. And I appreciate you coming. If you all want to hear Vicki's interview again, you can go to lisaseifcares.net and it'll be up on the podcast next week. Thanks for letting your roommate Anthony come on last week, too. He was awesome.
Thank you.
So a lot of your roommates have come.
Yes.
And hope to still...
I don't know if I'd call him a roommate.
Well, you're his social worker. He lives at your house. Let's put it... He lives at your house. I said, Anthony...
That would be interesting.
I said, you got to turn on 1400 AM at 11:30 and put Radio Rehab on in that halfway house. He says, well, I'll talk to Vicki about it.
Yeah, there you go.
So is there anything you want to say in the last minute before we close?
I just really appreciate this forum. I think it's just such a valuable thing for this community to have a voice and to have people be able to call in anonymously and ask questions.
Definitely. And they will, and I'll pass them on to you as those calls come in, okay?
Thank you.
Well, thank you, and we'll see you again soon.
All right.
Thank you, Radio Rehab. Don't forget, between now and next week, do the next right thing.